Today is February 15th, and we our plan is to finish Koheles today. We started Perek Yud, the beginning of Perek Yud, with the discussions of the Yetzer Hara and our natural proclivities to fulfilling what the pasuk says: Yetzer Lev HaAdam Ra Min Urav. Our Yetzer is to be selfish. We're born selfish and very inconsiderate. We don't even tell the people who are in our charge, whom we are in charge of, that what's bothering us. They have to guess: am I cold? Am I hot? Am I hungry? Am I cold? Am I wet? Do I need a diaper change? Right? So that hopefully will change with time. Right? We are by far and away the most needy species on planet Earth when we're born. Some animals within 2 weeks they've been taught how to hunt, gather, and make their one way goodbye. I'll never see you again. That's their whole schooling and their whole education, their whole kinuch. Right? Some 2 months, some 3 months. Right? Okay, we, the king of all of them, we get it. We wouldn't live past our first day. So we're very needy, and every needy becomes more selfish. Until we're taught how to share. No, you don't get to. If you grab that toy from someone else watches it, hey, I can grab and get what I want, so they'll keep grabbing if they're not taught otherwise. Right? Have you read the Plato's Republic, where he has a dialogue with a number of wise men about what is the best way to run a society? So some of them really indeed say the interests of the stronger is what is best for society. Hopefully they'll be kindly disposed to the weaker ones, just eat them up and kill them. But let the stronger ones convey their wishes and do that. Right? It's a practical thing, isn't it? Right? So the Torah is warning us. Listen, Cain and Hevel teach us the dangers of a competitive spirit. God couldn't get Cain to not kill his brother. Surely God could have told him something that would have prevented fratricide that day. Instead, he just told him, you have to try harder, buddy. No free rides. Life isn't fair. Get on with it. And he kills his brother. Cain's main sin was that he didn't ask his brother to join him the first day when he thought that I can gain from thanking this God, this powerful being, for my bounty. If he asked Hevel to do the same, by not asking him, he shows, I want it. The upper hand. Right? Had Hevel been asked to come along, Hevel would have looked at him, don't just bring me Pri Adama. Bring like me, bring me Miracious Pri Adama. And things could have been different for men. Right? So we're very competitive and very jealous by nature. Give one of your grandchildren, give seven of your grandchildren one piece of licorice, and then give one of them two. They've just gone from being very satisfied with their licorice to being very upset. Right? Rambam includes this in the laws of inheritance. Right? So why does God favor Hevel over Cain, knowing what's going to result? Because we are a meritocracy. Possibly even a capitalistic society requires a healthy dose of merit. Right? Lo tachmod means you have yours, he has his. But be careful. Shali shali shalcha shalcha. Ha'omer shali shali shalcha shalcha. That's midabainus. B'yeshomrim, but if everybody saw the darshani, the medrash is lashon. B'yeshomrim, if everyone says this way, you're living in Sodom. Because, true, competition brings out very good things in products, but it brings out very bad things in people. And if you do not protect yourself, like the Torah wants you to, the mitzvahs it gives, so that we have a midah of atranut, so I can be okay with someone else being successful, even possibly at my expense sometimes. Tithes, don't charge interest, leave your land like fallow one in 7 years. All these mitzvahs that are meant to teach us to be levater on what we gain from our talents. Because in a meritocracy, there will bound to be people who are going to be homeless and hungry because either bad, very bad fortune, terrible accident, they're not as talented, or they're not as driven, whatever else. Right? So meritocracy does very good for the people with merit and people with talent. But be careful, the Torah warns us, for people with less talent. And Cain says in the story, what every child has said many times, just as they learned how to talk, it's not fair. My daughter turned 12 during Sukkot, and for her bas mitzvah we studied Koheles together, and she spoke about it at the party, and she said, my father taught me the main message of Koheles is life isn't fair, and it's going to serve you lemons in your lifetime. Just make lemonade out of it and do the best with what you have. And sometimes you'll get help from friends and family, sometimes you won't, sometimes you'll get help from strangers. You should, he's taught me to always be there for other people when they need help. And if I'm there for other people, they may not be there for me. Because rule number one, life isn't fair. Right? So, get on with it. Make it fair. Make it fair for others. And then just keep your even keel. And, right? So, Perek Yud is about the Yetzer that drives us to these thoughts. Okay. Yetzer lev ha'adam ra min nehurav. We just have to work at fixing it. Okay. A huge difference between Christianity and Judaism on this. Judaism teaches we have it within ourselves to do this. Christianity teaches no. A human being does not have the ability to do so on his own. You need something else out there to take you with. You understand what I don't have to say it explicitly. Right? Okay, so here it says that the heart of the wise person is on the right, the heart of the fool is on the left. This is not meant to be a anti-lefty kind of thing, but this is what, you know, the Latin word for right is dexter. The Latin word, you know what the Latin word for lefty is? Sinister. So people just thought that a left-handed person, to the exclusion of using the right hand, was a negative thing. In fact, a Kohen, who is a lefty, you can clearly see he's a lefty. He's using his, he doesn't can't use the right hand with any dexterity. He's pasul to avodah. Can't do the avodah. Okay. So, there's one tribe in Israel that taught themselves to be lefties, but it says iter yad yimino, which literally means his right hand is weaker. Right? His right hand is weaker. According to some Mefarshim, that it doesn't mean their right hand is weak. It means that they taught themselves to use the left hand also. Right? I mean, if you can swing your tennis racket with both hands, that's going to let you catch a lot of balls that you couldn't do backhand. Right? So, one of my children was mamish, equally dexterous with activities, right and left. He once hit in the same game a home run in softball, but righty and lefty. He's natural lefty, but he was so much stronger from the right side. So I'm just saying is that there, these are natural tendencies towards being sinister. What does that even mean? All right, so we've been discussing them until now. But the Koheles is just saying is that we have it in our ability to direct what we're doing. We can be a righty and teach ourselves to be lefty. I think until about 100 years ago, if you were a lefty, I know someone, my wife's aunt, was a natural lefty, and they tie their left hand behind her back. Amish tells me the story. She became a righty. She learned how to use a right hand.
Same thing happened to my mother's aunt.
Mm-hmm.
So now she's forever in between.
Yeah. Which could be a good thing, I guess, you know. That's how Ehud Ben Gera was able to kill the king. Remember, he pulled out the sword from the other side. Didn't check that side because they didn't bother that. Right, I read in the Sefer Haggadah. Haggadah is a new commentary to the Torah that came out recently by Dr. Orlean, who teaches here, came out with Life's Work. It's amazing. It's very significant work of an Ashkenazic Rishon, his parish of the Torah. And he says that Yaakov named his last son Ben Yamin, even though his wife called him Ben Oni. Well, he changed the name. She, in the deathbed, she names a child. You have to change it. So Rashi says Ben Yamin is mean the child of the right, because when you're facing east, Israel is south is Yamin. Right? That's why Teman is to the right of to the south of Israel. Left is north. That's what Navram says, if you go right, I'll go left. Right? So, but that's Rashi. Some say Yamin means the son of my old age. But that's difficult, because Yisachar and Zvulun are just a few years younger than Binyamin. I mean, if you're 110, that makes you, if you're 108, that makes you Benyamin, and 106, you're not. Right? So the Sefer Gan says, Benyamin is because Yaakov wanted to walk with Binyamin by his side. So when Yaakov was walking, my right side, Binyamin was propping me up. So Binyamin's left hand became more stronger. And that's how he taught. He said, you know what? It's good to be able to use both hands. That's why they were the best soldiers, Binyamin. That's where the first king comes from, Binyamin. To protect us from the Plishtim. Anyway, let's go back in. All right? So we have... That's Perek Yud wants to tell us, know yourself. Know your strengths, know your weaknesses. Know that if you are given to bouts of anger, if you anger easily and you are appeased easily, remember that the Mishnah says about that? Perkei Avos, remember? If you anger easily and you're appeased easily, Yotzeschar Mev said, you're 40-60, you get angry too often. If it gets very difficult to anger you, but also difficult to appease you, okay, you don't get angry so often at 60-40. But so, and you could, if you anger rarely, but it's easy to calm you down, the Mishnah calls that a chosid. Right? But here's my question, and I'm telling you now the Perush of Shimshon Fal Hirsch to this Mishnah. It says, the Mishnah says, if you are easy to anger and difficult to appease, you are a...
Russia,
which is commonly the opposite of the chosid. But why? Says Shimshon Fal Hirsch. This is not necessarily a moral failing of this person. He's impetuous. He's immature, maybe. But why do I call him wicked? The answer to this question will go a long way to figure out what Shir HaShirim wants. What some of Kohelis wants, which is definitely this parak, not all the book is not on this topic, but what Mishlei wants. Hear this and hear it well. Is that if you are easily angered, you're just doing something angers you, and you blow your top. So you are volatile. You go quickly from one to another. Then such a person should be easily appeased also. If you're difficult to anger you, I only get angry 3 times a year, so it's got to be really big. I may hold on to that anger. Right? So that the person who is easy to anger but difficult to calm down goes against his grain. He made himself worse than Hashem did. In other words, he has abilities. He's a volatile personality. Sometimes that's chemical. Maybe he needs a drug. Sometimes it's beat by the environment. Sometimes it's chromosomes. It could be 1,000 different reasons. Right? But know thyself. You should know what your strengths and what your weaknesses are. Right? But if you are so in control as to hardly ever get angry, but to be able to be appeased quickly, like Moshe Rabbeinu. But when Moshe gets angry, look out. Think of when he gets angry. Ramban says, these are the places where he was guided by anger. When he sees the Egyptian beating the Hebrew, when he sees the Egyon, when he sees that Aaron didn't eat the meat for the Kapara, when he did the Chundas of Ice, When he sees that Pinchas didn't fight against the women in Midian, when he is angry with the Misonim in Parshas Paloscha, these five, and there are a few others, Rashi and all five of them tells us what Moshe did wrong afterwards for getting angry. The function of the five. So Rashi is not the one, it's Ramban who says that Moshe got angry when he saw the Egyptian and he acted like out of control. I must counter this, but the Meshe Chochma in some of these, it says that Moshe was acting cold and calculated when he broke the luchos. Sometimes you have to show anger at something. It wasn't uncontrolled when he broke the luchos. Okay, so this is what Koheles Yud is about. Know yourself, be in control, know your weaknesses, right? Be careful with those weaknesses. Alright? Okay. Pasuk Yud Aleph in Perek Yud says, Im Yishoch HaNachosh B'lo Lochash V'en Yisroel Nabal HaLashon. If the snake bites without being prompted, the dog won't bite you unless it feels threatened. The snake does not bite out of a threat alone. That's what he's saying here. Vein Yisroel Nabal HaLashon. He says, is there ever a Yisroel for the guy who speaks Lashon Hara? The answer is, of course there is. Of course there is. I want to take that guy down. Makes me feel good. Right? I mean, you know there ain't Yisroel Nabal HaLashon, right? Koheles compares the Baal HaLashon to a snake. So Chazal have an amazing insight to this. It's Gemara Kiddushin. The insight is Kol HaPosel Posel B'Mumo. Next time you want to speak Lashon Hara, catch yourself. Stop. Ask yourself, who am I really talking about? What the answer is going to be? Yourself. Kol HaPosel Posel B'Mumo. You bring something out against someone else, you're trying to bring yourself up on a thing you feel is you're lacking in. So I have an original word of on this that I shared once in my shul, is that there's only one parsha in the Torah that has only positive commandments, besides Bris Mila and Pur Ravu, but that's just one. But there's a parsha with 13 mitzvos asay and no mitzvos lo sase. Because you know that the mitzvahs lo sase is a landslide. Remember I explained it's better not to be born because there's so many more mitzvahs lo sase. It's a lot easier to be, have to be on a guard because it's a lot easier to be bad than to be good. We said we did that psukim earlier, the Gemara Neiru. So there, it's 60-40 approximately. So every parsha on average should have 60% lo sase mitzvahs, 40% ase mitzvahs. But to have one parsha with 13 mitzvahs in it, and all 13 are asay, there's nothing that comes close to that. There's no other parsha in the Torah that only has mitzvahs asay, certainly with that kind of number. Right? What's the parsha? What do you think? Come on, make an educated guess. Come on. Hit me.
Positive commandments.
Only positive commandments. And why am I saying this about Lashon Hara? Parshas Mitzorah. Only has positive commandments of how to cleanse a Mitzorah. Crazy, it's 13 to 0. Okay, what's the message? What's the best way to avoid speaking Lashon Hara?
Be positive.
Be positive about yourself. If you feel positive about yourself, you don't have a need to speak Lashon Hara. You hear it? That's why he compares about the Nachash. This is maybe Midrash. The Nachash is always sitting with a chip on his shoulder that, look what they did to me in Gan Eden. I used to be this, and look what I am now. So the way to get back up is to take someone else down to say it's someone in the heel. You get it? Okay. You know, when we talk about Parshas Mishpatim, it says, Ve'ela Mishpatim Asher Tosim Lifneihem. The Kli Yakar says, teach Mishpatim, teach the Jews that in the Torah, Mishpatim comes before Korbanos. Lifneihem means teach Mishpatim Lifnei Korbanos. Korbanos, which is a masculine noun. So, Ve'ela Mishpatim, not that you place before Bnei Israel, that you place before you teach them Korbanos. So when Yirmiyahu in the Haftarah of Parshas Tzav, on the rare occasion when it's actually read, so when Yirmiyahu says, why are you so lax on the interpersonal laws? I didn't tell you about Korbanos when I took you out of Egypt. Really? What's Sefer Vayikra? What's the end of Shmos? What's the Mishkan for? The answer is, it says, Alogi barti asavoseichem biyom hotziyo sam eretz mitzrayim al dibra olav azavak. You might as well eat your olos. They don't count in my eyes. Because the day I took you out of Egypt, the large corpus of laws that I taught you when I took you out of Egypt was not the Mishkan first. First I taught you Mishpatim. You see it? Okay. So this past Friday night in Shul, I said, if you ask me to set you up at someone's home, and after Shul you come up and you see, all right, he didn't go to Shul, you come up and you see he's watching TV. See his wife is cooking at the stove. It's already an hour into Shabbos. And you see his kids are texting at the table. Right? And you see another kid is doing the homework at the table. You might wonder, did the rabbi send me to a place with his kosher food? Am I getting kosher food here? Open Shabbos? Maybe they're not keeping kosher. Right? Well, how about this, I said. I wouldn't send you to such a place. But sometimes I send people to a place and they hear Lashon Hara at the table. It happened after there was a girl who converted in the shul, and I sent her for a place for lunch. And she came to me at Shalosh Shuddos with such a worried look on her face. And she said, the head of the household spoke Lashon Hara at the table. Unsputedly Lashon Hara. Does that mean the food they ate wasn't kosher? She didn't think that he sprinkled tarfus over the food with his Lashon Hara. No, that's this. She thought if he's going to speak Lashon Hara, maybe he's not makbid on kashrus. I said, halavai, that should be the way we approach Lashon Hara. Right? So at the end I said, enjoy your Lashon Hara free dinner tonight. You know, sort of, you know, if someone speaks Lashon Hara, they say, come on, let's not do this. Is the food kosher? So that's what Chazal say about the snake, right? Okay, Pasuk Yitzayim says, Ashrecha eretz shemalkeich ben chorin, disarayach beis yochelu b'gvur v'lovash si. Happy is the nation whose king is a free man, where they're not eating and drinking all the time. Wow. This goes back to Perek Beis, right? Think of the feudal system where the kings and their overlords were just getting drunk all night. They got up at 3 o'clock in the afternoon to sign some papers and take in their loot for that week or something, or you know, everyone had to pay for the measly few seeds that he would grant them on the land that they were given to sow, right? And this is what they did, day after day, year after year, leading a life of just the chosen few to continue enjoying their phenomenal and profound wealth on the backs of the masses. Is there any wonder that the first time that they could break off such a yoke, they always took an opportunity to? Don't think that we were free from such largesse. Yeshayahu chapter 28 speaks about the kings who were constantly getting drunk. Shikorei Ephraim. Kings from the northern tribes. In fact, you're familiar, can you spell the word of how Noah got drunk? It says, Vayiskal. So, spell me the next word. Vayiskal besoch ohalo. He revealed himself in his tent. It's very clear that this word is not the way it should be spelled. That's from the last class. It should be with a vav. So what does Yeshayim Lemesorah say? You can read it.
Oh, hello.
Oh, hello. Now, the fact is, the next time that word appears in Bereishis, it's also spelled that way. When Abraham says, Vayet, oh, hello. Rashi says the beautiful drash that he would always pitch Sarah's tent first. Whenever he did something for himself, and Sarah was poured her soda first, gave her food first. Very, very nice thing to do for your wife. So it seems that there's a plethora of these hello spelled in the Masorah with a hey. Here it's not that drash. He didn't reveal himself in his wife's tent. I'm not aware of any that would be interesting to me that he was doing so for a purpose, but there's no, I'm not aware of any drash that says that. Rather, what Rashi says is that you have to know Yerikiah is here. In Yechezkel chapter 23, he refers to two sisters. One named Oholah and one named Oholiva. And this is the older sister who became a whore. And this sister saw her and said, oh, become a whore too. This sister is the 10 tribes in the northern kingdom. And this is Yehuda. Right? So this one is the 10 tribes, which Yishayahu said saw their end because the kings are getting drunk all the time. You get the connection now? Noach. Teaching the world of what can happen when you get drunk. You can handle a world of water, but you couldn't handle a cup of wine. Right? So that's what Rashi does with the word ahalo, with the hay. Different drash that Rashi does with the hay. Okay, be careful, because when you give up yourself to shia, to this kind of drink, you are giving up your kingdom. Basically doing very basic. Right? Right? But we could say that Kohel is there, took one for the team. He just wanted to teach us not to try this. Because I, King Solomon, with all the wealth in the world, tried it. It didn't do right. Okay? You see this? See Rashi, Bracious Tezchof Aleph, Ohallah, Yishayo Chavches Aleph Dudalid, that's Shikore Ephraim. And so Sefer Mishlei with an exclamation point. Whoa. Why did I put that there? Because the end of Sefer Mishlei is about a woman, chapter 31, about a woman who tells her son, you are the king of a vast kingdom now. But be careful, you could lose it all for wine. And when the king realizes that the advice is so good, he sings her a song of 22 verses, which is, so remember, people think they're singing this to their wife. No, you're singing it to your mother.
Eishes Chayil.
The Eishes Chayil is not 22 psukim. The whole perek has about 9 or 10 psukim beforehand about this king and his mother. Right? Because you give yourself to wine, you know what you're going to give yourself next to? Too many women. You're going to give yourself to other dependencies. And you'll do things that you know you shouldn't have done afterwards. When you're drunk and these things, think of Noah, right? So the whole, what does she mean, you're king of a vast kingdom? She's speaking to every one of us. If you learned the first 30 chapters of Mishlei, and you took the advice, and you lived a life of what Mishlei wants of you, to be in charge, to know that I'm given to bouts of anger, but I'm going to control myself. I am in control. I'm not like Christians think. I'm out of control, and the only one who can give me control in my destiny is to profess belief in someone not born with my sin, because he wasn't conceived by a marital act. It's nonsense. Mishlei can teach you how to take control. Right? You, who's the king? Every one of us. If you learn the first three chapters of Mishlei and incorporate it into your life, you are king. You've learned Orchos Tzadikim. You've learned Mesilas Yesharim. You've incorporated the Midos and Deos to perfect yourself. Understanding that you will have weaknesses and you may fail sometimes, but you're going to bounce back up because Sheva Yipol Tzadik V'Kam. Sound familiar? It's a pasuk in Mishlei. Tzadik falls 7 times and he gets up again. Right? That's why I wrote Sof Sefer Mishlei back in wine. Okay? Perek Yud Aleph. Advice of Pasuk Aleph. It says, Shalach lach machal pnei hamayim. Cast thy bread upon the water. Ki berov hayamim timtzeena. You'll find it later. So I said, what does every pasuk in Perek Yud Aleph lead to? So Esav lives for the day. Right? I live for the moment. Right? We talked about that, Sarah sends Ishmael away because he's a mitzachek. But he's going to be a bad influence on my son. But your son's name is Yitzchak. What's the difference? Mitzachek is in the present. Yitzchak is in the future. Nothing wrong with preparing for tzchok, but just don't have it in constants. Right? After all, how does Eishes Chayal end? Vatischak liyom acharon. Towards the end. She knows that this oz yamalei tzchok binu. Many of them something like that. Esav lives for the moment. No wonder why he sought out Yishmael as his father-in-law. They're one and the same. Okay. So every pasuk in Perek Yud Aleph, you've heard of the saying, cast thy bread on the water. Prepare for another day. Don't burn your bridges. Okay. Always understand this person. I don't mean to just be cynical about it. But, and you know what? I think it's true even your friends in grade school. If you're cruel to someone in grade school and then you meet that person later on, he's going to remember that. You're always going to remember who was mean to me in camp, who was mean. I was always charged with going into the bunks and teaching them, you know, good midos. And, you know, now they have yachad in the camp. The kids are taught really good midos. The kids can be very cruel. I said, you know, you're 12 years old now. I used to go into the bunks and tell them stories at night, you know, the 9 and 10, the youngest kids. I said, just remember, you may, 10 years from now, want to date his sister. You can be sure as anything now that he's going to tell, don't do it, because of how mean you are to him now. You never know, cast that bread on the water. These are relationships you're going to, you know. All right, I don't want to be mean to him. He's just such a jerk. He's a jerk to everybody. All right, so stay, you know. There's always that kid in the yard that everyone picks on. And, you know, just, you know, be the one that you know, might then make you unpopular too if you try to protect that jerk. Okay, you know. Don't just stay on the sidelines and stay neutral. But this is not an easy thing to tell a 10-year-old or 12-year-old. But the point is that things are constantly coming in. Now that you're older at 20, for sure, stay the course, because there'll be things that, oh, it's a good thing. Advice is don't lose your cool. Don't get angry. You'll always regret that. Okay, so that's what Perek Yud Aleph is about, and that's why I'm going right to Perek Yud Beis. Amish, every pasuk, and he says afterwards, you never know what you're going to know later, right? His chorus, Yemei HaChoshech, it's really amazing. And he says, remember your youth, because whether or not you're going to dance at your grandchild's wedding is not because of what you're doing when you're 75. It's what you're doing when you're 35. Okay? Especially when you're 50. Okay, I mean, some people are, you know, you could be doing all the right things and you take a fall before in front of a car and nebuch, you know, you're not walking with me again. But chas v'shalom. But there are things that we can take charge of. And it's just stupid not to take charge of the things that we can. So many things that happen against our will. Some things that they're telling us now are sometimes random. We talked about that before with random mutations. Right? Okay, Perek Yud Beis. Pasuk Aleph, it says, Zuchoras borecha mimei bechurosecha. Famous drash in Perek Yavos about Akavi ben Mahalalel. Remember that you started off Boar, Be'er, right? It's different parts of your existence, right?
Ah, Shalom.
I'm not going to see him until Sunday. So, but you should hopefully get it very soon. His name is Hershkowitz, Robbie Hershkowitz. That's from 750, right? Okay, Shkratov, okay. Thank you so much. Okay. So you see, Rashi brings down the Zakavi B'Mahalalel. Tanan Tanina, Makavi B'Mahalalel, Mary Staka, B'Shlosh Advarim. If you look at three things, you won't sin. What are they? He says, Zechor is Borecha, Ashit, Tein Din V'Cheshbon Afanav. So remember your creator, Bor Echa, the one who created you. Zechor es Borcha, remember your pit. You're going to end up in a pit. The worm is getting the best of you, right? Become offer Rima v'Soleil. Uzechor Be'ercha, Be'er Shnovas, Nimakora, he tipas rucha shel zera v'shalubak. Remember your Be'er, you came from a wellspring that we all have a very, very, every one of us has the same source. Small little tipa, right? Fertilizing an egg, both of them together, smaller than the period at the end of the sentence. Right? We all have such a ignominious past, right? Okay, so Rashi just uses this pasuk as yimebechor sechel, and you still have that ability. Okay, finally, there's an irony about Pasuk Yud Aleph. See, it says, Divrei Chachamim Kedorbanos. I did not do this in the intro class, although I'm doing it with you right now. The words of Chachamim are Kedorbanos. Dorban is a noun. In fact, Kimasmeros is also a noun. Dorban is more of a large nail that you put through a harness to keep an animal's head straight when it's plowing. So if it turns, it's plowing, in the next line. So that's what a dorban is. It's an unusual word in four letters. Right? Have you heard of it? Dorban. All right, anyway. Masmeros, Nitu'ei Ba'al Asufos, Nitznu Miroe Echot. So the rabbis, if you remember now, you should recall from our intro class why this is an irony, use this pasuk, it's in the Chuvarim of an intro, use this pasuk to teach the canonization of Tanakh. What's the irony?
That
Kohelis is one of the books they thought didn't belong. All right, so obviously the one that makes this drash thinks it does belong, right? So masmeros, the darshan, as the other word is mishmaros, in the Divrei Yonim, it says there were 24 of them. Balei asupos, asaf is anshe kneses, kneses is lesof, anshe kneses akdova, did the work, nit the mirror echod, but it must be of divine inspiration. Okay? So Divrei Chachamim means the words of the prophets in Tanakh are firmly fitted, and there are only 24. Don't make more than 24, but also don't make less than 24. Right? And they must be from the works of Anshei Knesset HaGedolah, those are the Balei Asufos, and they must find the divine spark in all the books if they're going to be in Tanakh. If you think that it's not divine, like Mishle Ben Sira, then make sure it stays out. Okay. So you see, Divrei Chachamim Kedorbanos, B'Midbar Rabbah on canonization. It's a drash that appears in B'Midbar Rabbah. In your Choveret, here, if you want to just cross-reference, it is on page 13. Not in that one, no, in your intro, Kober.
Yeah, he's looking through the page.
Okay. Okay, finally, when the Gemara says that Koheles doesn't belong in Tanakh, So it said, because it leads to heresy, the end of chapter 3, the Miri says, this is what they were talking about, if he questions whether a man or an animal goes to a different place at the end of death, or because it leads to depression, everything is vanity, there's nothing worth striving for, or because it has contradictions. The Gemara says that we just resolve all those, and we chose to resolve them, because the book ends good. It says, Sof Dabar Kol Nishma Asad Lekim Yira. In the end, all will be understood. There is an end game. The fear of God, which is what we said earlier in the semester, morality. Okay? So that's how the book ends. As long as there's a good ending to it, it'll make up for everything else. And because afterwards it says, what happens if you don't have this? And Koheles ends on a bad note, right? Im Tovi Ra. I don't want a book ending with the word Ra. So the Masoras tells us to repeat the next to last pasuk. Remember that? There are four Masoretic, four public readings. One is Shatz HaGadol, Malachi, Inen Ofi Shalech Bachem, Eicha, Hashem Enu Shem Alechom Neshu Bachad Yishmen Kerem, on Tisha B'Av, Rosh Shabbos Rosh Chodesh, Yom Yidei Chodesh Bachad Shoh, at the end of Yishayahu, and this one. These are four places where Tanakh ends on a bad note, and I repeat the next to last pasuk, in order to end of the good. Yes? Pasuk is not repeated, so to say, in the Sorah. It's just that we repeat it liturgically, so we don't publicly end on a bad note. Okay? And, as I told you early on, there are 222 psukim in the book, Kaminyan Kvar. This is the only book in the Tanakh where that word appears.
Really?
Kvar. Kvar hayo. Kvar acharichat sukim. Kvar means, it's probably related to the word kivrat eretz lavo efrata. It's machokes, whether the chof is part of the word and part of the shorosh. Kivrat, I think it is. Kivrat means it's kvar, close by. Which Ramban says when he made Aliyah, and he saw how close Beis Lechem was to the border, he said that, that's my new interpretation. I thought Rashi was right when he said it means a far distance until I made Aliyah myself. Okay. All right, so that'll cover us for today, and cover us for Koheles. We're going to start 8 o'clock on Tuesday, Ms. Chen.